Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. I'm guessing most of you haven't paid much attention to the issue of protecting the fossil heritage of Mongolia. Well, my guest today, paleontologist Bolor Minjan, has done much more than that, making it her mission in life. Mongolia is the richest fossil area in the world, and in terms of diversity in numbers, it has more fossils than anywhere else on the planet, thanks in part to the Gobi Desert. There's little vegetation, so when it rains, it floods, and new fossils emerge. Additionally, the desert's been arid for most of the last 65 million years, helping to preserve dinosaur fossils. Preserving fossils is Bolor's focus. A specialist in vertebrate fossils from 145 million to 65 million years ago, Bolor has made numerous expeditions throughout the Gobi. She located 67 dinosaur fossils in the desert in the span of just 1 week. Bolor is the founder and director of the Institute for the Study of Mongolian Dinosaurs. In 2012, Bolor was instrumental in stopping the sale of an illegally collected Tyrannosaur Batar skeleton from Mongolia, coordinating the return and shipment of the unique specimen. This led to the discovery of a vast network of fossil poaching in her native country and the eventual recovery of many more specimens. In 2012, Bolor helped establish the Central Museum of Mongolian Dinosaurs, home of the Tyrannosaurus Batar. A year later, she was awarded a Polar Star by the Mongolian government for her efforts in protecting the country's fossil heritage. Bolor is married to an American paleontologist. They live on Long Island, New York, with their young daughter. Bolor, welcome and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So the study of fossils apparently runs in your family because your dad is a paleontologist. And is that how you got interested in dinosaurs? He used to bring his work home?
Yes, pretty much, yes. My dad really helped me, you know, supported me. And also, he was a teacher for me to be paleontologist. And considering how few paleontologists in Mongolia and very few people I can go and ask to be my advisor
or mentor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my father, he actually was my master's advisor.
When you were getting your master's degree?
Yeah.
Your dad was your advisor?
Yes.
That must have been a little awkward or odd.
Well, I think it was uncomfortable, but, you know, my undergraduate is in geology. I got my bachelor's degree University of Science and Technology in Mongolia, where my father has been teaching like over 40 years.
Uh-huh.
So I took his class when I was an undergraduate, and I know his, you know, way how he teaches and his subject area.
Do the other students know you were father and daughter?
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, not many students in the class. And of course, we know, you know.
Right. It wasn't overpopulated, huh?
Yeah. No, not at all. So for me, I'm actually quite lucky that way I have a father who is a paleontologist. When I was much younger, I really didn't know exactly what my father does. I know he, you know, I know him is being geologist because he go to countryside in Mongolia every summer, bringing, you know, bags of rocks.
Back home with him?
Back home mm-hmm. with him. Mm-hmm. And to, I've been his classrooms that he was teaching, and I've seen like sculptures of dinosaurs or like mastodons and, you know, and mm-hmm. like, you know, all these fossils, small sculptures. And for me, it looked very interesting. But I wasn't really, like, really wasn't into it because there's very limited number of sources that you can learn about dinosaurs and paleontology in Mongolia. Even when I was small, I didn't have a book on dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a toy, you know, dinosaurs.
Right. Well, and you're also a girl, and forget the sexism. There's also that, too, right? You know, do girls tend to play with dinosaurs?
I mean, that's true. Like, I know here in the States, you know, a lot of boys, you know, like dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of Mongolia, it's a very different picture, you know, and all kids in Mongolia had not much of opportunity to learn about dinosaurs, except we had a natural history museum in Mongolia that you can go there, see a real dinosaurs.
But that's so funny because here, you know, you didn't have much opportunity. But on the other hand, your country, like I said, is the richest fossil area in the world. It just seems like such a strange dichotomy. This is where the dinosaurs were hanging out, and most kids don't even know from that.
That's exactly the thing that I've been, you know, focusing on. Because even now, today, there's not much of dinosaur books, even on Mongolian language. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a few books been translated from English, but not much of books in kids can go around.
In your native tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in native tongue, in Mongolian, and no toys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are toys sometimes when parents go different countries, bring some toys and play with them.
Mm-hmm.
So very limited. And also, still, the dinosaur exhibits not often been updated.
So not much has changed, in a way, since you were a youngster.
No, not much. I mean,
in spite of your efforts. And
exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing I really want to change, that considering how well our Mongolian dinosaurs being known around the world, especially here in the States, every kid's almost named the species of Mongolian dinosaurs. And then, you know, our institute back in 2009, we did first dinosaur outreach for kids in Mongolia, out in the Gobi. So we specifically chose this town that is right next to the fossil site called Fleming Cliffs. That's very historical, important paleontological site.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1920s, the scientist from American Museum of Natural History, he led the expedition to Mongolia and to look for...
To uncover fossils?
They were actually looking for human origins. You know, they had an idea that maybe human origins in mammal, you know, originated in Asia. So they basically went with that kind of mission, but instead they discovered rich fossils of dinosaurs sites in Mongolia. One of them is the Fleming Cliffs, so which is the site they discovered first dinosaur nest in the world. Back then, that expedition thought that dinosaur nest, egg nest, was Protoceratops' nest, right? But then later on, there were second expedition came back to Mongolia after 70 years. They discovered another discovery, which was there was a dinosaur called Oviraptor was sitting on a nest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same nest that was basically being discovered back in 1920s.
So 70 years passed.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild, isn't it?
Yeah. So then it wasn't, the nest wasn't made by Protoceratops dinosaur. Instead, it was actually made by different dinosaur called Oviraptor, which means egg stealer. So that fossil site is very important historically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first dinosaurs been found from Fleming Cliffs in Mongolia,
mm-hmm.
Mongolian dinosaurs. So, and these kids live right next to these fossil sites.
And didn't know it.
Didn't know. I mean, they have some knowledge.
Or their parents didn't know it.
Well, parents, I mean, usually nomads, local people do have some general idea, I mean, knowledge of dinosaurs came from, you know, Gobi.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really know much, like, what kind of dinosaurs, mm-hmm. how important it was, and how big. And, you know, they didn't have such information to look for, to find out,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't have much of sources. What happened is, you know, all those dinosaurs been out of country. So 2009, we had this first dinosaur educational outreach to kids from different, like three different towns in the Gobi. We chosen those three towns because those three towns actually also close to another fossil site.
You said you had expeditions there?
It's a kids' educational outreach project.
And that was your doing, to reach out to these children who were living so close to these fossil sites?
Exactly, because, you know, these kids who live right next to it, they don't know about much dinosaurs.
Right.
And so we really want these kids know and excited about the dinosaurs right next
in
to
their backyards.
Exactly,
yeah.
The backyards, mm-hmm. they play. They can be future paleontologists.
Hello.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
And so that's very important. You know, all these years, you know, since 1920s, some people in Mongolia don't know, but
there was nothing
know.
Much going on there because
exactly.
only because people didn't know. Mm-hmm. How old were you when you came to the States? You got your undergraduate degree in Mongolia.
And I got my master's. So it was early 20s, I think maybe around 23.
And you came here 24. To get your doctorate all by yourself? Did you know anyone here?
No, only people from the expedition who were with me out in the Gobi. I didn't know anyone. My English was very bad, and I can't express myself well.
That must have been really scary.
It was very scary, especially I only see New York from movie, right?
Real different from the Gobi, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it's very different. I mean, I actually grew up in the capital city, Ulaanbaatar.
Yeah, but that's not Manhattan.
It's not a Manhattan, but it was very, I guess I had a cultural shock, you know, because I had a preconceived idea about New York because of, you know, seeing
movies,
some movies and stuff.
Of course.
So there's a lot of, you know, action movies and crime and stuff, right? So it really makes you kind of
leery, a little scary.
Yeah, scary mm-hmm. side than exciting.
So you come here. Had you basically been out of the country before?
No.
You never left Mongolia?
Never left Mongolia, and my first plane ride straight to New York.
Did you have a mentor here? Did anybody kind of take care of you when you first arrived? And you were in your early 20s. This is kind of crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the expedition was led by Michael Novacek, Mark Norell. Both a scientist from American Museum of Natural History. So they were mentoring me, and basically I came here through the expedition. And I was basically, first thing I needed to take care of was my language. I have to improve my English, so I went to English school. And then when I was doing that, I applied for graduate school. And then I was accepted within a year. So it was hard for me coming to New York, especially in Mongolia, you know, we just opened to Western world. And so.
Right. You were just exposed to the West. That's right.
Yeah. And then these people from the museum was the first Westerners I saw. And my second language used to be Russian.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just, it was hard for me to communicate with them. Even in expedition. So
how long were you in New York initially when you came?
For a year.
For 1 year?
Yeah.
And then you went back home?
Yes.
And you went back home and you said, I'm ready to roll up my sleeves and start looking for dinosaur fossils?
Well, I think that's actually happened before I came to New York. I actually already started working with this expedition
right,
in Mongolia.
You said. Mm-hmm.
And so that was basically was my first exposure to digging fossils, especially vertebrates. So that's basically how I started. And then every year I was going back to American Museum of Natural History expedition, you know, looking for more fossils. And for me, it was very exciting. You know, I tend to see to finding small things. I guess my eyes is tuned to smaller things.
What are smaller things?
So small things that tend to be, you can find like a skull of mammal or lizards.
Oh wow, that does sound like a smaller thing.
Yes.
As opposed to a really large thing that would be a dinosaur.
Exactly. I mean, of course, I do find, you know, occasionally some dinosaurs and, you know, dinosaur skeletons and stuff like that. But for me, my eye just right
zeroed
on small
in on
things.
That.
Even someone just walked by, didn't find it. I can, you know, see it and finding. It's really kind of exciting.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Bolor Minjin, who happens to be a paleontologist from Mongolia, but lives in the New York area. I want to move a little ahead to where you did this work about finding that there were poached dinosaur fossils that were taken from your country illegally, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you know about that?
This poaching problem is not just current thing. It's been going on some years. Since Mongolia been open to become democratic country in 1990.
1990, okay.
Yeah, so right after that, collapse of Soviet Union, and it also affected to Mongolia economically. It was
mm-hmm.
really hard for us to stand on our feet that, you know, and so even they were times we didn't have anything to buy in the grocery store.
Wow.
So it was really hard, and it was really hard for people's life, you know. It's just the
thing. To earn a living and survive.
Yeah, we never been experienced such thing. And so it was very difficult economically. And so I think probably around mid-90s, you know, these problems start to happen.
That you became aware of the fact that
yeah.
these precious relics were leaving your country.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like physically see it in, you know, and I hear things. Even when I was a student and I hear about dinosaur eggs can cost money. You know, it's like, you know, people start to see that is some kind of income.
Sure.
Right? I mean, that's how, you know, earliest I heard about what's going on with the fossils. And I start to, you know, working on vertebrates and becoming student of paleontology. And then I came here in the States. And then when I go to meetings or when I, you know, see some catalogs of company like auction houses, you can start to see Mongolian fossils in it and has a price tag on it.
So that you were really more alerted to that once you came here, that the problem became even more pronounced
even
for you.
Even pronounced because, yeah. you know, when I'm in Mongolia, you know, I don't see those things, but I can hear it, what's going on. You know, people start to have a knowledge, I mean, where that, oh, the eggs and dinosaur bones can cost money kind of
They can things. Get it in their pockets.
Yeah. And then when I came here, I start to see the dinosaurs, Mongolian dinosaurs.
Where at auction houses or?
Yeah, like auction house catalogs on the internet.
Okay.
And it's getting more and more so, more recent years, it's getting like.
Worse.
So it really worried me that, you know, how we can stop this thing. You know, it's just like, it's just a matter of time. You know, things can get really bad. So luckily that 2012, May 17th, I was just sitting in a coffee shop having my lunch and then saw New York One News and see
on the TV.
On TV. But I couldn't hear what it say because, you know, they, you know, turned it off.
Turned the volume off. The
volume off, you know, usually what they do, you know. And then I just like, that's.
But it caught your eye.
Caught my eye and dinosaurs looked big and. You know, doesn't look like a T-Rex, you know. The preservation looked kind of different. I couldn't tell if that was auction or anything. I didn't know what was it. I just see a dinosaur. I just like, oh, maybe new species of dinosaurs discovered or something. But then I went back home. That evening, I actually started searching because I remember the image I saw.
And stuck with you.
Stuck with me. I searched on a Google image and see what was it. Then it actually was auctioned.
So it was stolen.
Yeah. And so this auction was scheduled on May 20th. I was sitting in my home and looking on the computer, May 17th.
It's
3 days before this auction. So what happened is right away I sent email to one of president's advisor, whom I was in contact some years trying to get. I mean, the one of thing that our institute does is, you know, we trying to get the government and politicians bring them into this issue and find some solution what we can do.
Did you get a response?
Yeah, she did. And because I've been in contact with her before and I introduced her this problem before. And I basically asked her to read, you know, multiple books about Mongolian paleontology and also this looting problem and poaching problems and not only in Mongolia and other countries and how they, you know, resolving kind of, you know, books, stuff like that. And so I sent an email to her, say, hey, this is, you know.
We got a problem.
This dinosaur from Mongolia is going to be auctioned nearly $1 million.
And this is this Tyrannosaur Batar skeleton. It could only have been found in Mongolia. This was a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the president on board. And so take us, what happens in these 3 days before, you know, you have no time before May 20th? What do you do?
Well, it's really crazy. I think time difference really helped us a lot because Mongolian time basically 12 hours forward. So the evening ahead of us. So the evening of Thursday is basically morning of Friday in Mongolia. So it's just, the you know, people just started to go and work. So it was right that time I sent this message to president's advisor. She right away went to the president to introduce this, you know, basically told him about this problem.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they all, you know, got together, people who, you know, the officials and ministry from science and education. And so the president's office did very quickly did press release
mm-hmm.
about this selling of Mongolian dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, when I was here, I was trying to get paleontology community to involve with. And I sent email also the same time when I sent email to president's advisor, I basically sent email to Mark Norell of Natural History Museum here.
To get on board.
To get him on board and asking if he has known about this sale, I'm asking, you
mm-hmm.
know. And then also I sent email to Phil Curry from, to Canadian paleontologists in Canada. So all these, you know, paleontologists been working in Mongolia many years. They're very familiar with especially dinosaurs because those are dinosaur specialists.
Mm-hmm.
So we all came together. So that was very important. But the meantime, president's advisor told me I should do as much thing, if you know, just do is what I can do to stop this auction. So I basically wrote a letter from our institute to Heritage Auctions president and asking them to hold off the auction till we find out the origin of this dinosaur.
Right. Uh-huh.
So what happened is I was able to talk with him on the phone, and he told me that his lawyer will contact me back. So his lawyer sends back and contacted me back, they're basically saying like they will proceed the
go ahead
the auction. So I sent email back to Mongolia. I said, okay, we have to do this legally. And so they basically then started looking for lawyers. Then luckily they found a lawyer in Texas and happened to be the same town that Heritage Auctions headquarters is in. And so he was very quick that he was able to get a temporary restraining order
uh-huh.
on Saturday
uh-huh.
to hold off the auction till June 1st.
And he bought you more time.
Yes. So he worked really hard too. And then, and also people in Mongolia and president's office and Oingirl. And so in Sunday, the auction day, I myself and went with lawyer Robert Painter. He's, you know, he was representing the president, the lawyer. So he came to New York, and I was there, and also another person, Ann Altman, she was a friend of Oinger. She's also a scientist, too. And then, so we came to auction in Chelsea area.
Mm-hmm.
So
of Manhattan.
Of Manhattan. And the same time, there were Mongolian community learned about this auction. They actually were protesting outside of that auction house.
And you were able to stop the auction.
Well, auction actually proceeded, but they basically didn't give the dinosaur to the person who bid on it.
Yeah, had the highest bid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but because of the, you know, temporary restraining order.
Sure.
So then they can't transfer the dinosaur to the bidder. So basically what happened is then June 5th, Heritage Auctions agreed that to have some group of paleontologists, including myself, to go to see this dinosaur and basically say if it's really from Mongolia or not. So, because we are, you know, specialists. We've been working in the Gobi.
You're the experts.
Many experts, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been working in the Gobi so many years. We know how the bone looks
of
like.
Of course.
And anatomy.
You were going to certify that this was a Mongolian dinosaur.
Exactly.
And you did.
Yes, we
it
did.
It was. So you prevented somebody here from having a dinosaur from Mongolia in his or her backyard or in his or her gallery or whatever, museum.
Yeah. And basically, the person who was going to auction this dinosaur was a commercial collector, and he had a business in Florida. So he even himself went to Mongolia with his partner from England.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the same time this case was going on, the Homeland Security able to seize like five more Mongolian dinosaurs from this American citizen, and then 17 more from British, his partner in Britain.
In Britain.
Yeah.
So that's terrific. You really got the ball rolling here. You were, I guess that was a wonderful coincidence that you happened to be in a New York deli at the same time report was on the television about this. I'm curious, Bolar, do you feel good about the next generation of paleontologists in Mongolia? Do you think all your work and, you know, getting involved with youngsters and having summer expeditions is paying off? Are there more Bolars in Mongolia than there were when you were growing up?
Well, I think the thing is there's so much to do. That's the thing our institute really trying to do. So what we have very few paleontologists in Mongolia today. And so it really needs to expose young people to paleontology.
And, how do you do that?
Well, museum is really obvious thing. And first of all, that you can have a display of dinosaurs. But at the same time, you really need to have, here in like natural history museums, or any natural history museums in Western countries, they have educational programs for kids in schools and family and, grown-ups and teach them about dinosaurs. But we don't have such a system yet.
But you're working on it.
We're working on it. And also even books.
How often do you go back and forth to Mongolia? I mean,
every summer.
And in the summertime, you're going back on expeditions?
Yeah. And, yes. And the thing about that young generation, our institute have a master's tuition award. So far, we have given like 5-6 students.
You paid for their education?
Yeah, master's tuition in Mongolia.
Tuition, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so encouraging them to go for paleontology.
To pursue higher education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, to become a paleontologist, you know, being geologist really helps, and also biologists.
Mm-hmm.
So we were supporting geology students mostly. And so we had two students come to States. And with our institute, Museum of the Rockies actually really helped us to stand on our feet. And especially Dr. Jack Horner, who is a dinosaur specialist in Museum of the Rockies, he really believes that, you know, Mongolians should be working on their, you know, own fossils. They should have their own, you know, next generation of people.
Of course.
Yeah, so that he really helped us to achieve our, you know, dream.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to bring two students to Montana State University. One is actually doing PhD on paleontology now.
And then we'll go back home.
We'll go back to home, hopefully next year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's finishing up.
So you work on your institute from New York, and then every summer you go home and you go on expeditions and you bring children with you and you're just doing this wonderful work, Bolar. It was just a pleasure to meet you and hear all about you. It's very exciting. What did I know from Mongolian dinosaurs? And I think it's terrific what you're doing. We've run out of time. It went really fast, but I want to thank you for having a conversation with me. It was really terrific.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.